Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Manchester United drop out of the top four after a 0-0 draw with Liverpool, which sees the Scousers go top of the league. But it's a day to at least be mildly content with. Four injuries in 40 minutes in the first half should have crippled United, but instead it was Liverpool who only had one shot on target in the whole game. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Reds were dominant and looked in control, and Old Trafford was rocking at 0-0. A club with an atmosphere of positivity, excitement and unity. An odd day, but one where Ole admitted he was a fan of the Stone Roses after Ole's at the wheel echoed around the Stretford End and Jay Stand once again.
It's great being in charge of this club and team, of course. Of course it is. And I'm a big Stone Roses fan anyway, so it just goes around in your head sometimes. But I like the... This is the one when you walk out, maybe even better.
The mere fact that we and all other Manchester United fans are at least somewhat disappointed by that result against the league leaders when we had three injuries and pretty much played with 10 men for the second half shows the impact of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on this club, Jack.
The impact he's had is massive, and Liverpool, that game was a perfect example of why, because all you had to do was look at and hear the fans at Old Trafford throughout that game, even when our backs were against the wall, and Liverpool weren't really dominating us in terms of creating chances, but they clearly had the majority of the game. We were very disjointed because of so many players being out injured and going off injured, which we'll talk about in a second. But the mood around Old Trafford never, ever changed. There was never a point where the fans started getting agitated and started, you know, getting on the players' backs. There was never a point when you thought that the fans were about to turn on the players. And if that exact game had happened under Mourinho, you just know that the atmosphere around Old Trafford would have been so, so, so different.
Yeah.
And rightly so, because Ole has completely transformed the mood around the club. And, you know, it's almost becoming a bit cliche now to talk about the way that he's improved the mood around the club, because I think it's kind of taken away from everything else that's gone on and all the other good work that him and the players have put in. But in games like that against Liverpool, when our backs were really against the wall and things could have gone south very, very quickly, to see the way the fans react to what the team's trying to do is just amazing.
Yeah, it was an incredible atmosphere. We'll talk more about that in a second, but let's stray away from the mood since we've mentioned it so much recently. But the effort and performance levels from some of the players was fantastic. From some of these fringe players who have come into the side as either late replacements because of injuries before the match or late replacements within the first half and the first half an hour. They came in and put the effort in, did fantastically. Rashford played on with an ankle injury for 85 minutes against Liverpool. Pogba shifted role three or four times because of the various changes, and Bostic, he didn't manage to provide the magic, the key goal, the key assist, but he was key defensively and key in controlling that United side and stopping it from crumbling.
I think he made more interceptions than anyone else on the pitch.
Yeah, but it was kind of his role to keep, with McTominay and Pereira next to him, to just keep that midfield relaxed. And about Pereira, lost the ball a few times, but that's kind of his nature and a huge effort. And it clearly meant a lot to him. He realised the chance he'd been given, because every tackle he celebrated with a fist pump. He went for it. He G'd the crowd up. And on Pogba, you saw Pogba go over to Pereira at one point and just give him a little pat on the back and say, just calm it down very slightly. Don't go too full in on this and just relax yourself. And that was the role of Pogba and the impressiveness of Pereira.
I loved Pereira's performance. I thought, like you said, he lost the ball a few times and he wasn't amazing going forward, but no one on our team was. It was more about the way he put himself about on the pitch. It was just incredible. He was everywhere. And that the one that really stood out to me was when Henderson got the ball in tons of space down Liverpool's right, and the one time Liverpool got in behind Shaw, and Pereira tracks him about 50 or 60 yards down the pitch and blocks a cross coming in and celebrates it as if he's just scored the winning goal. And there was a couple of other times where we'd win a corner and you'd see Pereira celebrating. And it was just great to see him playing like that, because we haven't seen Pereira be so involved in a game like that in so long. Even when he has played, the few times he played under Mourinho, we never saw that kind of passion from him. We never saw him be that involved in a game mentally, I think, which is a big thing. And it was nice to see Pogba kind of stepping up as a leader and trying to help him get through the game as well. I thought everyone adjusted so, so well. I mean, to keep Liverpool one of the best attacks in the Premier League without a shadow of a doubt, to effectively zero clear-cut chances, would have been a great effort, even with all of our players, our full-strength team out. To do that with a midfield with only one regular starter is just a credit to both the players and the coaching staff for the adjustments they made on the fly, dealing with the adversity that we had in the first half. Yeah. And really, I mean, I think Liverpool had one shot on target all game, which I think was a Sturridge 35-yarder.
Yeah, I think they had one shot on target. I think it was Sturridge in the 33rd minute or something. They didn't have a shot on target in the second half when we had all of our injuries and we changed the whole thing. But it wasn't just Pereira and the other, but you saw Alexis come on, was fantastic. McTominay replaced Matic. He must have only known about that half a day ago. And I saw, I was at the game, and on the tram on the way there, I was talking to my brother about how the criticism of McTominay is similar to what Fletcher received when he first broke through. And obviously, it's an easy comparison because they're both kind of tall, lanky, blonde Scottish midfielders. So it kind of seems natural, but it doesn't stop there. And Solskjaer compared them after the game. So Alex Ferguson has compared them before. And they are, the criticism that he receives is so unfair for a 22-year-old who has come through the academy. And he was fantastic. Look, Scott McTominay is not going to be Manchester United's first choice midfielder. I think we know that. I think deep down he probably knows that. And I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knows that. But for him to come in and put that kind of performance in without doing anything special, without some amazing forward passes, without being able to play through the lines. Yes, his absence is, the absence of Matic was notable, and of Herrera too. But McTominay put in a very, very solid performance. Fantastic in the first half with all this chaos going on around him. He broke up play multiple times. He was key in winning back possession and shackling Liverpool, really.
He managed to be one of the calmest players on the pitch for most of the game, despite being 22 years old. Like you said, thrown into the starting lineup probably half a day before. And he never expected to be starting this game. And he came in and he just did his job exactly how he was supposed to. Like you said, he's never going to be the most flashy player. He's never going to grab the headlines, because that's just the kind of player he is. It's what Darren Fletcher was like when he was at United. But he's also the kind of player that the longer he stays at United and the more he puts in these kind of performances will start to endear himself to the fans. Because if there's one thing that the United crowd appreciates, it is hard work and effort in their players. It's why Carlos Tevez, before he
Judas
moved,
himself.
I was going to use a different word, but moved to the other side of the city. You know, before that, that's why he was so loved at United, because he was that kind of player that was everywhere. And you saw the reaction that Alexis got yesterday as well, when he was constantly closing Liverpool's back four down. And it's that kind of effort, that kind of player that actually do endear themselves to the United fan base. And McTominay will do that the longer he stays in the team. But yesterday, I think, was probably the first time you've seen McTominay and thought he can play. He is. Not that he's played badly before, but this was a different level to the games he's been involved in the past. And when he has been thrown into big games before, he hasn't really quite lived up to it. He's been quite passive in the game, but he was far from passive against Liverpool. He was constantly breaking up their play. Anytime Wijnaldum or Henderson were trying to drive through midfield, he just put a stop to it. And he came in and, yes, Matic was missed on the ball. But defensively, which is primarily what McTominay was brought in to do, there wasn't really any difference between what McTominay was doing and what Matic would have been doing.
It's worth noting that we're impressed by McTominay for not making a mistake. And the same goes for Pereira, actually. And that shows you the level that they're at. But it doesn't mean we can't praise them after they do have a very impressive showing against Liverpool in such a big game.
Yeah.
And I mean, Victor Lindelof and Luke Shaw were both fantastically good, and that is becoming the norm in the last few weeks. Luke Shaw kept Salah oddly quiet to the extent that I was watching him thinking, what's actually going on here? There was nothing there from Liverpool.
No, not at all. Every time they came forward, you thought, all right, now is going to be the time when they really show us why they're such a good attacking team. And it just never happened. Every time they came forward, they just looked like they had no idea. They were trying to put the ball wide out into the channels, but then Salah and Mane both were trying to just come inside all the time. They just didn't look like they had any firepower going forward at all. And Klopp spoke after the game about how, you know, they had really tough circumstances with Firmino going off. And I think Graham Souness mentioned it as well. But one player going off shouldn't derail your team that much, especially when you have players like Salah and Mane, who are supposedly two of the best wingers in the world, you know, coming down either side. It shouldn't derail your team that much.
The even more ridiculous one was, I was talking after the game and my dad hasn't quite managed to hate Jurgen Klopp yet. And I think a lot of United fans had that problem in maybe the first season while he was at Liverpool. He wasn't that hateable. And yet I've come to really dislike him because of the constant stream of excuses that comes out of him when his team underperforms. Yeah. And I said to him as a joke, I said, look, he'll blame United's injuries now for Liverpool drawing that game and underperforming. And about half an hour later, I'm scrolling through Twitter and you see Jurgen Klopp says their injuries disrupted our rhythm. Now, look, yes, the fact that we had so many injuries in the first half would have disrupted their rhythm, sure. But they then had 50 minutes playing against a team whose striker was hobbling on an injured ankle to then go and score a goal and failed to do so. So, I mean, it was pathetic.
And it wasn't like a failed to do so in the way that Tottenham failed to score against us, where De Gea was making 15 saves.
There was no contribution there from any of Liverpool's main forwards. They have to take off their main man Salah, bring him off. Obviously Firmino had gone off earlier. Yes, that's a bit of a blow, but I mean, we hardly had any of our players. If you go through our injury list, Matic, Herrera, Mata, Lingard, Martial, that's five key players. That's five starters for Manchester United. And one injury to Firmino and three injuries to us. I've never seen an opposition manager blame the other team's injuries for them not performing. It was just a farcical comment, but one that was oddly predictable.
It was a ridiculous comment from Klopp. And to be fair, I actually liked Klopp quite a lot before he came to Liverpool.
I think a lot of us did.
And if I'm being brutally honest, I wanted him to replace Moyes when Moyes left. But I have grown to dislike him a lot because of all the excuses that he puts in. Also because of the way Liverpool fans hype up every single word that comes out of his mouth. But that's another thing. But no, some of the excuses that he makes, I'm just like, I don't understand where he's even got the idea from. Like you said, to try and blame the other team not being at full strength for your team not performing well, it's just ridiculous. It's like saying, oh, well, you know, we're in the FA Cup against Yeovil this weekend. Sorry, we're just not going to turn up. And it's ridiculous. And especially when you're a title chasing side, supposedly the best side in England, the title is on the line. We're in February, you're top of the league, and you have an opportunity to go 4 points clear of City against your biggest rivals in their own backyard when they have five of their starters out. And you're saying that it's their fault for not putting out a full strength team. I mean, I just don't understand any of it. Some of the excuses that he comes up with are crazy. And to be fair, I would actually put quite a lot of Liverpool's bad performance on him because I understood playing a more conservative midfield without Keita from the start because, you know, we were obviously the form side. And I think at the start of the game, to be fair to Liverpool, I think at the start of the game, a draw, they would have taken that, would have been a decent result for them. So I understood why he put that team out. But I don't really understand why, A, which he does a lot, takes so long to make substitutions. He often leaves until 75, 80 minutes before he makes any kind of sub. And there was just a lot of things in the game I think Klopp has to answer for. And for all his shouting and bellowing and histrionics on the sideline, it's pretty rare he actually makes a difference during the game with his substitutions.
Well, I tell you what was weird is that you didn't come away from that feeling tense.
No, not at all.
The final, it's not like the final whistle blew and there was this kind of sudden sigh of relief around Old Trafford. It was just like everyone carried on chanting, carried on singing, carried on clapping the team. It was just like we haven't been threatened for an hour. We haven't faced a single shot that De Gea's had to save for an hour. And it didn't feel like a tough game. And that's a weird thing. I think if Liverpool had been good and we'd got that draw, there would have been more celebration for United at the end of the game. But as it was, it felt oddly like a missed opportunity. And that's a weird thing. With the injuries, for a team to suffer four injuries in the first half, make all three substitutions, having been missing two key players in Martial and Matic before the game as well, and to come out and boss the second half like the United side did, that is a testament to the confidence, the resoluteness and the character of the side. And yet at the same time, Liverpool definitely had an off day. Or not necessarily an off day. Liverpool were bad. And so it does feel like a bit of a missed opportunity. But at the same time, a draw against the league leaders with five first team injuries that happened within 24 hours or within the game itself is a fantastic result. And so there's a lot of conflicting emotions there.
Yeah, I felt really strange at the end of the game. Honestly, I just couldn't figure out what to feel, because part of me was like, and I said this as soon as we made our third change, or if really as soon as we made our second change, if you offer me a draw right now, I'd take it 100%. And a draw at that point was a great result for us because of the circumstances that, you know, we were in. It was horrendous, and a draw was a great result. But at the same time, you're kind of thinking, Liverpool played so badly here. Like, we should have, maybe not should have, but it feels like a missed opportunity when Liverpool played that badly to not come out of it with a win. So yeah, it was. I've never really felt like that at the end of such a big game. Normally you come out of it and you have a clear sense of like, all right, we've done really well or we've done really badly here from this game. But I've never come out of it feeling like that. It was just strange. I didn't really know whether to be happy, sad, or content, or whatever.
Yeah, it felt like a testimonial for about half an hour, with players coming on, then being subbed off, and then sub after sub, and then one of their players coming off as well. And you really wouldn't have been surprised to see Solskjaer whip off a bib and come on, and Mike Feeling to come on and dab about in the middle of the park for a while. But it was strange. And to be honest, it's a real test. And the thing it shows me is it's a different hurdle each week for Solskjaer, Phelan and McKenna, Carrick and Mark Dempsey that they've overcome. The first few games in late December showed the attacking quality and the change of mood. Then Spurs, the win at Wembley, showed how Solskjaer and his team can master a pretty big game and win the tactical battle and showed their tactical nous. Arsenal showed that he could do that again with a different lineup. PSG showed that there's still stuff to learn. Chelsea showed that he could boss an away game, come back from defeat or come down from that huge mood after the PSG loss. And Liverpool showed that he could deal with sudden adversity. And so it's not as if it's all been plain sailing. We are seeing him jump over these different hurdles week after week. Some of them have been the same, yes. Some of them may be different, but we're not just seeing one side of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the rest of his coaching staff. We are seeing them face different challenges and do better. It was a real test, and Ole got them to come out impassioned second half and play properly. At times, we had 10 men behind the ball, but we tried and tried, and we did come close. Players like Alexis and Pereira storming into tackles, Pogba diving across, and Pogba had a chance, Smalling had a chance, we had a goal disallowed for offside. It was a real test, and one that they passed with flying colours, I think, and a late winner just would have been bedlam.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, in the pub I was watching when Matip put the ball in his own net, it was bedlam for about 5 seconds until everyone realised what was going on. So I can only imagine what it would have been like in the stadium if that had counted. But, yeah, it was, I come out of the game and I've been thinking about it now as well. I think I am happy with the way it turned out, because I get the feeling it could have been so much worse. But you do also just have that, not, I guess, not regret, but it's that feeling of what if, I guess, is probably the best way to describe it. Because you're just wondering,
yeah,
you know, what if Smalling could have just, you know, got an extra yard ahead for the ball in from Lukaku towards the end of the game, or, you know, what if that Matic's like the offside goal would have counted? There's just so many things like that, little moments where you just think we could have done so many things differently. But at the end of the day, I think you'd have to take 0-0 from the position we were in after half an hour, 40 minutes. And I think my overwhelming feeling towards the game is just pride that the players played so well, because the vast majority of them, in fact, pretty much every single player down to a man, was brilliant, the way they applied themselves. And I think we can't do this episode without giving a massive shout out to, well, the entire back four, to be fair, but specifically Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
That was, I think, his best game of the season. And we all know how well he started the season. It was definitely his best game under Solskjaer. He's gone a little bit under the radar recently. His performances have been fine, but they haven't been great. They haven't been terrible. He's just not really been talked about very much. But he brought himself there.
I think he's not offering as much in an attacking sense as people expected. It's a change. Yes. And I think he's been really solid defensively recently. And that's kind of a flip from before. We're used to praising him for his attacking contribution and criticising him for his defensive woes at time. And that's changed. And I think people are a bit surprised by that and haven't quite adjusted.
Yeah, and that's, I think, why he hasn't really been talked about much, because he's not really doing much going forward and he's not doing anything wrong in defence. So then people don't really have much to say about him. But he was brilliant yesterday. The way he dealt with Mo Salah was brilliant. And just all game, he never looked like making a mistake. And even though we weren't really getting forward very much throughout the game into attacking areas, he was really important, at least in just giving us some time as we came out from the back. Him and Pogba did well down the left flank because Liverpool were trying to press them very high. And they did well on a number of occasions with Alexis as well, to kind of get out of some of those presses, some of those presses, and at least just relieve the pressure for a little bit. But like I said, the whole back four was very, very good. It was yet another commanding performance by Victor Lindelof, who just keeps getting better every week. And he looks like a mainstay in our defence now for the next few years. Even Chris Smalling had a good game as well. They never looked like a mistake in anyone in our back four. And for a back four that's half made up of Smalling and Young, that's a big achievement.
I think the thing with the effort we saw from Sanchez, Pereira, whoever, it feels as if there is a genuine connection there between United's players and United support. And I think even in the good spells under Mourinho and Van Gaal and Moyes, I really don't think we had that. There was always that sense that United's fans and players were completely separate entities. And I think they're starting to merge back together into one force now, a little bit. And obviously it may only be temporary. If we lose a few games on a bounce, it could dissipate entirely. But we are seeing some appreciation from the fans for the effort, and the players are getting their reward from the fans for the effort they're putting in. And they're being spurred on by what was an amazing Old Trafford atmosphere. Now, I've been lucky enough to go to some big games at Old Trafford. My first game was the 7-1 against Roma in the Champions League, which is obviously, if I hadn't seen such riches, I could live for being poor. The quote applies no more aptly to that game. And then I was at the Real Madrid game in 2013. I've been to loads of United Liverpool games, but I've never heard Old Trafford like that. I was sat in the Sir Bobby Charlton stand, which is opposite the Sir Alex Ferguson stand, one of the ones on the side. In fact, I'll play the clip of the end of the game now.
The United players just walked down the tunnel, and the atmosphere at Old Trafford has been unreal. That song, of course, kind of enveloping the players here. The sun escaping the attention, no clouds. And you can see we're sat in the Sir Bobby Charlton stand. We had the J standers to our right, dancing in the sun. The Stretford Enders to our left, dancing in the sun. All singing together. Amazing atmosphere and an okay result. 2 points taken off Liverpool. And when they're chasing a title, that'll do at least, especially after three injuries, which is ridiculous in this first half.
And Stretford End to my left, J Stand to my right, basked in the afternoon sun. And the weather helped weirdly, but I haven't seen that at Old Trafford for a long time. Not just the noise, but it was the fact that it was in unison. The people in the posh seat sat down, the prawn sandwich brigade clapping along to Ole's at the wheel and getting involved in it. A cauldron of noise building into this fantastic sweep across the pitch. And you can imagine for a United team who have faced four injuries in the first half, they must have given them some motivation. Usually it's just the core in the Stretford End or the men and women in the doing fantastically in J Stand in United Road, but it was different. And it felt, I think Gary Neville said on commentary, that it felt like a game from the 90s, and it really did feel like this huge wall of noise coming from all sides of the stadium.
Yeah, even just watching on TV, you could hear the whole game. The Old Trafford just never stopped singing. And most of the time at Old Trafford, if we're being honest, a lot of the atmosphere comes in response to what's going on in the game. You know, the fans are kind of reactive. It's dependent on how we're doing on the pitch, which is why the atmosphere got so toxic in a lot of games under Mourinho. But this was completely different. Regardless of what was happening on the pitch, the volume levels were up as high as they could be. Every single corner of the ground was getting involved. And, you know, and the Liverpool fans were awful enough to ruin the great tribute to Eric Harrison at the start of the game. And then we didn't hear a peep from them for 90 minutes because Old Trafford just completely drowned them out from every single side of the ground. It was one of the... I mean, I said last week that PSG was one of the best atmospheres I could remember for a long time at Old Trafford. And this trumped it even more because the way that the fans just got up regardless of what was going on in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was coming out the second half when I really noticed it because it would have been very easy for the fans to just kind of become very nervous and almost just like kind of go into their shell and just hope that we could hang on. But the way they responded when we came out for the second half was amazing. And I think that probably played a big part in giving the players the boost that they needed.
Yeah.
And you saw the way the players were responding. We talked about Pereira earlier. You know, he's responding to the crowd. The crowd are responding to him. It was great. And you can tell that the relationship between the players and the fans is so, so much better than it was a few months ago.
Yeah, well, Pereira won a corner just in front of the Stretford End, and as he walked over to pick up the ball, just threw his arms up, telling the fans to give even more and even more. And that's the thing. There's that genuine connection there. And it was the fact that it was everyone, not just a certain section of the people who go to the away game starting the songs and no one else really joining in.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic game. And as you say, it was because it wasn't responding. And usually after half time, you get that lull of about 5 or 10 minutes where if the team doesn't do anything, the crowd never wakes up. And I think we had that against PSG, actually.
Yeah.
And instead, it was, I think within about a minute, you got this complete in unison chant of Ole's at the wheel. And that's different to stuff we've heard before. And yeah, you're right about the Liverpool fans. I've been to a lot of United Liverpool games at Old Trafford in the last 6 or 7 years. And there's been times when they've been admittedly brilliant, but they were so quiet. It was really odd. They'd occasionally pipe up, but for once it was the United home fans. That's the impressive ones. And you mentioned about the minutes of applause for Eric Harrison. The thing with Eric Harrison is he's not just a club legend. He was a great football man. And there was a nice tweet from Craig Norwood. He said something along the lines of what you did, saying, "Nice of Liverpool fans to show disrespect during the minutes of applause to a United club legend," and then follow it with 92 minutes of silence at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Which is very true. And then after the game, they were posting these videos on Twitter of them singing once all the United fans had left. It was like, well, great. You didn't really support your team, though, did you? You kind of just wanted a fancy video at the end of it with flares in an empty Old Trafford. So that was interesting. But Liverpool as a team as well, it wasn't just the fans. The thing I thought, I came out of it and I said, City would have battered us with those circumstances. City would have picked us apart in the middle of...
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no doubt.
In the middle of a couple of injuries, a couple of substitutions, when Matt had gone off after Herrera coming, you would have seen Aguero scoring. Or Sterling scoring, they would have picked us apart and then gone and destroyed us. And obviously, you didn't see that from Liverpool.
Yeah, it was a perfect example of the difference, I think, between Liverpool and City at the moment. Liverpool somehow, and I don't mean to sound kind of bitter as I say this, but for me, they haven't impressed with their performances that much this season. Despite winning so many, and that sounds weird coming from a team that's top of the league and has only lost once all season, but they had I think Liverpool's best performances last season have been better than their best performances this season. They haven't looked as dominant in games as they did last year. And I think we saw that today. If City were there today, they would have absolutely destroyed us in that second half. They would have battered us because we were there for the taking. But Liverpool's move, I think the thing that separates Liverpool, at least in games like this, from City is the midfield, because Liverpool just don't have that midfielder who's able to make something happen on their own. You know, you look at that midfield of Henderson, Wijnaldum and Fabinho, they all get about the pitch, they do their job really, really well. I thought Fabinho had a very good game. But they're not really going to make something happen for them going forward. And that was what they were missing against us, because the front three were being shut down by our defence. And you could just see that from midfield, they were lacking a bit of creativity. They were lacking someone who could come forward and make something happen on their own. But just as to finish this little bit for me, just seeing a great tweet from Anna MUFC as a great way to sum up the Liverpool fans and the Liverpool Football Club from yesterday. So they ruin a tribute to Eric Harrison. Souness cried nonsense on live TV about how Liverpool dominated. Owen wanted Liverpool to kick Rashford, and Klopp blames United injuries to ruin his own team's rhythm. There's a reason no one likes the Scousers.
I'm fairly sure Anna's a listener of the podcast, so I mean, thank you for that contribution, that unintended contribution, Anna. But yeah, I mean, wind, long grass, dry pitch, wet pitch, the opposition's injuries, Jurgen Klopp's excuse book gets bigger and bigger. And by Christmas, it'll be one of those little tiny books that's a great Christmas stocking filler or something. After we hope they haven't won the league. Final quick mention, five academy players on the pitch at one point. Rashford, McTominay, Lingard, Pereira, Pogba, all on at one point. Went down to four, obviously, after Lingard got injured. But, I mean, on the day where we paid tribute to Eric Harrison, it was an appropriate tribute. And now I think with the injuries, I would predict that James Garner, who's a midfielder, and Tahith Chong, who's a winger who's already made his debut, will come in for the game on Wednesday against Crystal Palace, which we'll talk about in just a second. But Manchester United's under-18s drew 2-2 with Blackburn Rovers on Saturday morning. Always an eventful game at that level. Before this tie, the last six games between them had seen one of the sides score four goals in every single game. Mason Greenwood's injured at the moment, so Mipo Ojebeko made his under-18s debut. He's an exciting Northern Irish striker who's been playing at under-16s all season. He's still very young, but it took him only 20 minutes to get his first United under-18s goal. Ethan Laird had given United the lead. He was making his return from injury. The England youth fullback has been out for a while, and he was fantastic on his comeback. His attacking contributions from that position are massive. Jacob Carney, a goalkeeper, also made a rare appearance for the under-18s and did very well. Blackburn got two back in the second half as United tied, but there were definitely positives from that 2-2 draw. The under-19s have been drawn against FC Midtjylland, the team who Marcus Rashford made his name against in the last 16 of the UEFA Youth League. If the Reds win, they'll play one of Spurs or Porto in the quarter-final. In loan news this week, goalkeepers Dean Henderson and Kieran O'Hara both played for Sheffield United and Macclesfield Town respectively. Joel Pereira was an unused sub for his new Belgian side. Defender Regan Poole started for Newport in a 2-0 loss against MK Dons. Ethan Hamilton played for Rochdale again. Matty Willock made his debut for Crawley Town in a 1-1 draw against Kieran O'Hara's Macclesfield. Zach Durnley was in action for Poole's goals this Oldham Athletic. Wilson, Twanzebe, Borthwick, Jackson, Mitchell, Fossey Mensah, Whelan and Tom Sang weren't involved for their sides this weekend. Now, in women's football news, Manchester United saw off Sheffield United with ease a week ago today. Goals came from Lauren James, Ella Toon, Molly Green and Katie Zellum in a 4-0 win. Now, Jack Palace on Wednesday. Rashford will be out. Mata, Matic, Lingard will probably out. Herrera too, and maybe Martial. So it could be very tough. And we can't lie about this. United season could fall apart very quickly with these injuries. There is a very genuine concern about that. But at the same time, the Liverpool game showed that we can cope, and it's a good chance for players like Garner and Chong to come into the squad. McTominay will have earned himself some credit against Liverpool and will probably start. Perhaps we'll even get a glimpse of the mysterious Fred at some point, and Pogba will be key. But I'll talk about Pogba in a second, but yeah, it'll be a tough game.
Yeah, definitely. It's never an easy place to go and play. You know, it's always a hostile atmosphere. They don't, you know, the Selhurst Park pitch is also extremely small as well, and it stops you from being able to play the way you want to. I think it's an important game for us, I think, to kind of get back to winning ways. It was such a high after the Chelsea game, and then Liverpool game wasn't really a come down, But it's going to be important for us to make sure we can continue the momentum, just like we did at coming back from the PSG game to play so well at Chelsea. And also to try and figure out how we're going to go forward with the injuries that we have. You know, it looks like all of the people that went off in the Liverpool game will at least be missing for this game, if not a few more. So it's important that we figure out whether we need to change the system, who's going to come in for who, and how we're going to play moving forward. So I think it's a kind of, we said this a few weeks ago about, I can't remember what game it was now, about trap games, kind of in the middle of a bunch of big matches all around it. And this is one of them. But we need to just make sure we're staying on form and make sure that we're concentrating the whole week, because we have a lot to work on to try and figure out how we're going to adjust to all the injuries.
Yeah, and two slip-ups against Palace and Southampton and United are out of the top four race. There's no doubt about that. So United need to win these games. But the thing I was going to say about Pogba is Pogba will be key in this period. I am slightly concerned that he could also get injured in this busy spell. We saw it, I'm trying to think what period it was last season when Pogba was overplayed and he did get a muscle injury and was out for some time. He came back early from the World Cup.
Wasn't it November? Because he missed the derby, didn't he, I think, last season?
Yeah,
he got
possibly
injured just before the derby.
Possibly, yeah.
Or was that a suspension? I might have been a suspension, actually.
But there was definitely a point last season when he was overplayed and he got injured. And there was no surprise about it. I remember talking about it on this podcast. But he came back from the World Cup early. Yes, he got an enforced rest because Mourinho hated him. But he has played a lot. He's played almost every game. The only positive about his red card against PSG means he will have a break when the rest of the Reds go to Paris for the Champions League game. But Carlos Jimenez tweeted in to say something similar, saying,
"I think the intensity of each game and the lack of the break is catching up on the players. I don't think it will stop there either, with the World Cup players getting very tired, Pogba looking fatigued. Can we keep the momentum while losing our best players?"
Well, I think we can, yes. And I think it's a great opportunity for certain players like Garnachong, but also players like McTominay, Pereira, Alexis, Lukaku even. But Lukaku was pretty poor against Liverpool again. But then we've got Southampton at the weekend, another game United should be winning at home. We're yet to slip up in one of these games under Solskjaer, really. We kind of did against Burnley, but not quite. It's hard to predict the Southampton game without knowing the outcome of performance of the Palace game. But we do need to win these games, but we can't really judge his managerial credentials on the next two games.
No, I mean, I think what we can judge is how quickly he's able to adapt, which we've already seen, to be fair, in the Liverpool game, and adapting kind of on the fly against teams like Tottenham and Arsenal. But yeah, I think we need to just keep this momentum going. Like I said, we've been doing so well, the confidence is so high, but this is the kind of game that can easily derail that. And despite how well we've been playing, you know, we are still behind Arsenal for fourth now. And we have to keep winning these games to get top four. I think we all kind of got lulled into this false sense of like, oh, we're definitely going to get top four now. Look how well we're playing. But actually, it's not a given at all. And we have to keep winning these games. We can't afford any slip-ups against kind of smaller teams. We need to keep it rolling. So in response to the comment from Twitter, I am a little bit concerned about potential muscle injuries. I mean, I think it does often come down to some bad luck as well as being overworked. But hopefully getting a little bit of rest, like you said, Pogba will be getting some rest against PSG. We'll probably be seeing some rotation in midfield and up front now, kind of enforced rotation. But at least it'll give some different players a chance to come on and prove why they should be starting ahead of the likes of Rashford, Martial, Lingard when they come back.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that the change in style of play and the change in training methods will have caused these injuries. I mean, yes, there is an element of bad luck in it, but United got three injuries to hamstrings in Herrera, Mata and Lingard. Rashford was an impact injury, an ankle injury, but the other three were all hamstring injuries. And I actually I bumped into Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, which was, he was a warm and beautiful man who was so nice and chatted to us for about 2 or 3 minutes, to me, my brother and my dad. And we were talking about the injuries and he said, yeah, I've worked them too hard. And didn't really seem to be hiding that fact. He seemed to recognise it straight away. And, I mean, he would have worked them too hard without a pre-season in which to make these players adjust to that new style. It's impossible that they weren't going to get injuries, but do you then sacrifice your training methods just because there's a risk they might get injured? It's a really hard decision to make. So it's a difficult one for him.
Yeah, of course. It's one of the most difficult decisions you have as a manager, because he wants to come in, he wants to maximise all the time that he can get on the training ground with everyone. Like you said, he's still trying to implement his own style, his own methods. But I think especially when you see a game like Liverpool where, you know, three different players go down with pretty much the same injury, I think you have to kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit, at least for the next few weeks, until we get a few more players back in the squad.
Yeah. Now, that's all we have time for on Series 4, Episode 29 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for listening, as always. And remember to leave us a review on iTunes if you are enjoying the show. Find us on Twitter for more from your host, with Jack over at...
at UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
And me at Harry Robinson 64. The podcast itself is at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Palace on Wednesday, and we'll be back in 7 days' time, by which point we will also have played Southampton. Cheers for listening. Have a fantastic week. Up the Reds. Goodbye.
Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.